Hi, I'm Susie Burrell.
And I'm Leanne Ward.
And welcome to The Nutrition Couch, a weekly podcast from two of Australia's leading dietitians, bringing you everything that is new in the world of nutrition, diets, and good food. From The Nutrition Couch today, meal delivery kits. There are so many options out there. Are they a good choice for healthy eating or even weight loss? We break it down for you. Our client case study is all about working from home and easy ways to keep your food and activity goals on track. We take a closer look at a new supermarket smoothie with collagen added and ask, will consuming collagen in our food instantly make us look years younger? And our listener question is all about protein shakes. Should you be taking them after your workouts? But to get us started this week, how's clinic been for you this week, Leanne?
Oh, Susie, it's been pretty busy. My clients have been, they've been really on track. They've been meal prepping this weekend, so they're ready and prepared for, you know, a busy work week ahead. I just feel like everyone I talk to lately is busy, busy, busy. Everyone just seems to be quite busy at the moment. No one seems to be slowing down. So that's the same in clinic. It's the same in general life as well. How's your clinic been going?
I have been quite busy as well because I think there's so many people who are here now. They're not going overseas in the short to long term. And so work has really picked up for them. Everyone's back to their normal routine. And I've got a lot of clients who are doing the juggle between going into the office and then working at home or starting to be full-time in the office again. So they're really looking for practical solutions to make healthy eating easier. So it's been giving me lots of ideas for podcast topics moving forward to try and bring some of these practical strategies to keep our health on track as life really, really ramps up again. So it's been quite helpful, but probably like you, when it is busy at work, I really struggle to get my own activity in and I'm starting to do a lot more meal prep on the weekends because, you know, it's tough when you're juggling kids and work and long hours with traffic and things like that. So hopefully my personal experience and yours will bring lots of helpful tips to our listeners.
Definitely.
So what we thought we would kick off today is a really common question that I'm asked frequently and contacted a lot by companies who are doing or offering meal delivery options. And specifically, of course, there are meal deliveries that are pre-made meals, but there's also the kits, which are really family friendly and focused on making healthy eating at home easier. So I thought, and we both thought it was really worthy of a discussion about it because the question is, of course, are they healthy? And if one of your goals specifically is weight loss, are they conducive to that? So I've definitely got some thoughts on it. I'm sure you do as well. So give me it to start us off. What's your position and summary on the meal delivery kits that are in the market at the moment?
Yeah, Susie, and I think that there's many different brands out there. So we're going to not name brands on purpose and just sort of talk about meal delivery kits in general. So it really is up to our listeners to go and sort of have a look through the different brands that are out there and see what sorts them from a budget perspective, a recipe perspective. And as you mentioned, whether you want a full meal delivered or whether you want the kit delivered that you can actually cook yourself. And I sort of like some of the kit options. And I do know that some of my friends with young children actually like that because A, they don't have to go to the supermarket too often. B, they don't have to actually plan out what to cook. They get sent recipes. They get sent all the ingredients and see a lot of the meals are pretty, like they're pretty easy. Some of them can be like one pot meals or you put something in the oven, something on the stovetop, it's done in sort of 15, 20 minutes. And a lot of them are very, you know, family friendly type meals. You know, you've got tacos, lasagnas, burgers, chicken schnitzels, that sort of thing as well. So meal wise, I think a lot of the companies offer quite tasty options. I think my biggest thing from a health or a weight loss perspective is that the portions tend to be very large in these meals. Don't forget, you might be cooking one of these meal delivery kits for hubby who runs marathons. You might be cooking for yourself who's, you know, 5'1", who doesn't really get much activity at all, sits behind a desk all day. You've got a couple of teenage kids and a 7-year-old. Everyone in the household has different requirements. So you're cooking these meals, which are broken down into, you know, say 4 servings, for example. So I think it is a little bit to and fro in terms of the serving sizes on there, but they do tend to, with a lot of the meals, be quite higher calorie from what I've really realized. Heavy on the carbohydrate and a little bit lower on the vegetables. Don't get me wrong, most of the meal kits have some good amounts of veggies in there, but it's certainly not up to what we would call the recommendations for the Australian Dietary Guidelines in terms of 5 serves of vegetables or salads a day.
And absolutely, my general position on them is they tend to be really quite high in calories. So whenever I've had to review them for Sunrise or I've had a whole lot of them sent over, not only is it difficult to differentiate between the brands, they're actually really similar. And even in price point, there's one I think that's a bit cheaper, but in general, they really sit at a very similar cost per meal. But when you take a look online, I find most of the meals are sitting at about 800 calories. Now, the other thick trick to it is there might be one healthier version that's a bit lower in carb and come in at 400 or 500 calories, but the bulk of them tend to be really high calorie meals. They're often using, I've noticed, a fattier cut of meat. So it's often a fattier mince or a chicken thigh. So something straight away that's adding more fat to the meal. And then they're usually got a pretty decent serve of carbohydrate, whether it's rice or noodles or sort of big flatbreads to make fajitas or wraps that go with dinner. Now, some people will say, well, you don't have to eat that part of it. And of course you don't. You know, you can make the stir fry or the burrito bowl without the carbohydrate. But then I would say, well, what are you paying for? You know, if you're starting to fiddle around with the meal. So my message to people who are using them or who want to use them is you've got to go online and really take a good look at the calories on them and see if they do have a lower carbohydrate or a lower calorie option. Because the average meal I'm prescribing for my female clients, and you know, I'll be fully transparent, 90% of my clients are females who want to lose weight. I want their dinner to be about 400 or 500 calories. So there's no way that any of those meals fit the prescription that I'm giving at 800, even 1,000 calories per serve. They are quite transparent. If you have the time to go online and really take a good look at the calories, you can see exactly what's in them. So I would say before you spend money, I would really be very clear that a lot of them are, even though they're described as healthy, I would argue they're high calorie, and there's a big difference between healthy and calorie loads. And I think that again warrants another discussion on another day. Just because something is healthy doesn't mean it's conducive to weight control.
Absolutely. I always say healthy is very different to fat loss. And I think that you make a really good point because, you know, you could go and order a delicious salad in a restaurant, which could easily be 800 or 900 calories if it's got some delicious smoked salmon, some avocado, some tahini or olive oil in the dressing, some nuts and seeds thrown in. All of those extra fat sources really do tend to blow out the calories. And as we were chatting just before we jumped on the podcast, Susie, I said, we've actually been using some of those meal delivery kits between moving houses in the last few months and that sort of thing. It's just been a bit easier for us. But I was making one of the recipes last night and I just had to make up some garlic rice. And it was, you put the rice in, you put some garlic in, and then you added some olive oil and then you added some butter into that as well. So not only was the rice portion probably 2 to 3 times the normal amount that I would have myself for my own requirements, you also added butter and olive oil into it as well. So there are simple little things that you can control yourself from home, which I think is the benefit of taking the meal delivery kit versus the pre-made meal. And also you can control extra things. Like often I'll have extra spinach or tomatoes in the fridge that I'll just dump in to bulk up some of the meals as well. So if you are willing to get a little bit creative in the kitchen and take a few things out and add a few extra things in, I think you can definitely make them fit your requirements from a weight loss perspective. But then again, if you're doing it for ease, if that's number one reason you're doing it is just to make life a little bit easier, perhaps at the end of the day, you're just making it harder on yourself anyway, right?
Well, it is if one of the goals specifically is weight control, because I, as I said, they can really load up and be a much heavier meal at nighttime. My sort of assessment of people who are using them is often they're just wanting a change. It's that novel factor. It's new recipes. It's something that they don't have to think about. And that's why I often encourage my clients to have a list or even just go through a recipe book and pick out some new meals to add to their repertoire to give them that novel factor. Because when you look at the price, they're not significantly cheaper than if you bought some chicken breasts, some chicken tenderloins, a piece of fish and served it with a marinated vegetables that are already done at the supermarket. So they're not cheaper, I think. So it's that novel factor that comes into it, that people are just looking for something different. So that can be one way I try and get that excitement around eating again. It's just looking for new recipes that are not only conducive to your weight control goals, but just add some different excitement to the menu. And if you go to Kmart or Target now, there's just a million different healthy cookbooks you can get for, you know, $10, $12 even, that have a range of new recipes. So sometimes that's all we need, is just a little bit of inspiration around cooking. Or what you could do is go online and get some inspiration from those meal kits and see how you could also almost do it healthier yourself. But in saying that, it is also worth having a look. Some of the options do have specifically a lower calorie option that you can choose from or a lower carbohydrate option. So you just have to do a little bit of research rather than diving in and assume what they're sending you is going to automatically be healthy just because it's a meal delivery kit.
Absolutely. And really keeping a note if you are using them, which as I mentioned, I am at the moment, it's completely fine. I do take sort of control around what I add into the recipes, don't always add the ingredients, etc. But what we really do try and do each week, Susie, is make sure that we jump online. There's a cutoff time each week for the next week's delivery kit to choose your meals. And if you don't choose your own meals, the company essentially just sends you, you know, what they have on offer. So often if we don't choose things, we end up with a lot of Mexican-based meals. So tacos, fajitas, lasagnas, that sort of thing on burgers, which aren't typically things that I make quite often. You know, I much more prefer soups and stir fries and lots of veggie dense meals at dinner time. So I think that really making sure you've got something set in your calendar to pick your own meals each week before the cutoff time is a really, really practical strategy if you are using these meal kits to ensure that you're having a good look through what's on offer, you're choosing some of the lower calorie options, and you're actually getting foods that you enjoy or leaner cuts of meat. You know, often I'll make sure I get at least 1 to 2 salmon options each week, which means that yes, I do pay a little bit more for it. But, you know, I know that salmon is something that's incredibly healthy. So I do want to get my 2 serves of fish in or salmon in a week. So that's something that I'll pay a little bit more for, but I actively have to choose because the company will never just send me the salmon options in the recipe. It's generally always chicken or beef, particularly mince type meat as well, because it's a lot cheaper.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I like that tip. But as also a reference point, if you are someone who does like to order the meals online for whatever reason, what I would say is that a reference to what is a reasonable calorie load from a meal is sort of between 400 and 600 calories and definitely less than, say, 30 grams of total fat. Was that a fair call? Maybe 30 grams of carbohydrate. There's some rough guides that I would suggest you look for.
I think you'd really struggle to get less than 30 grams of carbs in one of those meal delivery kits, but see how you go. And as I did say, it is an easy way to control. Like, I'll just make up the rice portion or make up the pasta portion, cook it all, and then sort of see, you know, give my husband a bit more. And if there's a bit of leftovers from that, I could easily make up, you know, throw some of that leftover rice into a nice tuna salad bowl the next day. So just because you cook it all doesn't mean you have to throw it out, and it doesn't mean that you can't use it in other meals as well. You don't just have to use it, you know, because you've cooked it up.
That might be quite a strategic way to do it, actually, is to break them up. And if you make a larger meal across two and use the heavier carbohydrate load, say the rice or the pasta in the lunch meal, and then stick to the lighter, smaller meal, that's quite a smart way to do it from both a budget perspective and then balancing out the calories too. So you can absolutely use them. It's just to be aware of actually what's going in and taking a closer look when it comes to making those options.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Excellent. All right. Well, moving on. A very common client case study that presents in my clinic is a professional person who is now working both at home and then going into the office maybe a couple of times a week. And because their routine is very different post-COVID, they're now really struggling to get the balance of nutrition through their day, particularly if they're now needing to take food to work or make choices in the food court or the cafe, but also their movement each day. Because when they were at home all of the time, they had their routine perhaps of where they were doing a walk and maybe getting to the gym or doing another workout at home, or when they were going to the office every day, they sort of knew how many steps they needed to take. But I'm seeing a lot of my professionals, you know, getting 2,000 or 3,000 steps per day, which is just way too low for someone, even if you are exercising, as we discussed last week. So a couple of the little tricks that I have been using to get my clients back on track is to, rather than put all of their steps together in one swoop, so you get to 4 o'clock and you've done 1,000 and you need to, you know, do an hour and a half walk, which is really just overwhelming and daunting when we're tired and busy and getting home late, is I try and get them a target for each portion of the day. So say, right, before you get to work, you want to have done a couple of thousand, maybe going down and getting a coffee or parking further away, picking up something for lunch later in the day. And then again, after lunch, making a concerted effort to get up after eating, sitting down perhaps at your desk or at the lunchroom, and then going and doing an errand and getting another couple of thousand. So then by the time it gets to 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you've sort of got 6,000, even 8,000 steps, and you're really not far off reaching that goal of a minimum of, say, 10,000 to 12,000 per day. So that's the first thing I've been encouraging, and that's a lot less daunting than, as I said, trying to get all the steps together later when the days run away from you. But the other thing I've really been getting clients to concentrate on is packing their lunch, because in my experience, when we know what we're having to eat for the day, we're less tempted by things that cross our path we don't get to 1 o'clock at home and think, oh, I'm really hungry. I might go down to the cafe and order a jumbo chicken schnitzel sandwich or order in Uber Eats. So it just keeps us on track and needing to make fewer decisions through the day. So we're more likely to be on track. So there are a couple of things I'm finding are working really well with my clients as they get back to normality. But I wondered, you know, if you had any other tricks and tips as well for your office workers.
Yeah, and I think one of the most important ones is listening to your hunger and not eating until you are hungry. Often, you know, if we're going back into the office, we think, oh, going back into the office, I got this meeting, I got my emails, you know, I don't know when I'm going to eat lunch. So they're waking up and they're just eating breakfast for the sake of eating breakfast because they're not too sure, you know, when they might have lunch, or they're like, I don't want to go into the office and then be hungry. But a lot of the time, if you're waking up at, you know, 5, 6 a.m. quite early in the morning, the sooner you start eating, the sooner you're going to get hungry and need more snacks and more calories throughout that day as well. So I really do think it's important to listen to your hunger and only really start to eat breakfast when you're hungry. So that might be at 6 a.m. if you wake up and you're feeling really hungry, no worries. It also might be at 10 a.m. if you wake up, you're pottering around the house, you're getting the kids out the door, you're packing your lunch, you're commuting to work. By the time you actually get down to your work and sit at your computer, it might be 9 or 10 o'clock or even think about being hungry and you're like, oh, now might be a good time to have some breakfast, or now might just be a good time to have a coffee and a piece of fruit or something like that. So I think really being in tune with your body and your hunger is something that's really, really important, not just waking up eating because that's what we're so conditioned to do. And then I really like your idea of the step goal as well, and breaking that down throughout the day, but not just throughout the day, throughout the week as well, because a lot of my female clients suffer from that sort of perfectionism like I do myself, where it's that very all or nothing. If we're not perfect one day, then we're totally off the wagon. And if we're not hitting that 10,000 steps 1 or 2 days in a row, a lot of clients will get in their head and sort of think, well, I've already ruined this week, what's the point? So I sort of like to average the steps out over the 7 days. So if one day on the weekend, you're going for a nice long hike, or you're taking your family out to the park and you're playing soccer for 2 or 3 hours, you might get 15,000 steps on a Saturday or 15,000 on a Sunday, which is awesome. And if you only get 5,000 on a Monday, that's okay. We can average that out through the week as well.
That just reminded me of office workers. There's the coffee break. So you might have a coffee to get you to work, which I'm in full support of, but then at 9 or 10, a colleague will go for a coffee. And because it's social and it's nice to get out, you sort of go again. And then before you know it, you've had another coffee, which is equivalent to a slice of bread of calories if you have a latte or a cappuccino. And then, of course, if someone orders banana bread or the muffin, or there's a delicious looking pastry. So I think be very mindful of the effect of others. One of the biggest predictors of eating behavior is others eating around us. And so even if you have the best of intentions and you're not hungry and you go with others eating, it's going to be really quite challenging. So know your low calorie options. Know that you can get a herbal tea, know that you can get a piccolo, which is minimal calories. Know that if you are really desperate, a little biscotti isn't the end of the world. So when you are in those situations where everyone's having something and you kind of don't want to miss out, you also know what are the better options so that you can indulge but not overblow the calories. Because if you have, say, another extra coffee and a slice of banana bread, there's 500 calories extra, and that's just been a snack before 10 o'clock. So be aware of the influence of your colleagues on your eating behavior.
Absolutely. And I was very much one of those ones when I used to work at the hospital, Susie, where I didn't want to miss out. So I swapped my coffee that I would have every morning just for a green tea. I'd drive into work and have a sip on my green tea while I was waiting in traffic. By the time I got into work, then I would have my breakfast around 7:30 versus 6 a.m. before I left the house. It used to take me about a 45-minute commute to get into the hospital, 15 minutes to walk up to the hospital. I'd got some steps in. All I'd had was a herbal tea. By the time I sat down at my desk, opened up my emails, I thought, oh, I'm feeling a bit peckish now. I'll eat my breakfast. And then when everyone went to get their 9, 10 o'clock coffee, I was on board with that and I'd go and enjoy that as well. And I always had a little fruit. So I'd eat, munch on my piece of fruit while I was waiting in the line. Everyone else would pick up little protein balls or, you know, slice of banana bread or something like that. But I did that really good habit linking where I always wanted to aim for at least one piece of fresh fruit a day. And that was always while I was sort of chatting in line with colleagues and waiting for my coffee. And that was sort of what I used to do, is like a fruit and a piece of coffee for morning tea, where, and again, that's okay because I'm quite a tall person. I'm quite active as well. Maybe that's a little bit over some people's requirements. So not saying that that's a great idea for every single person, but as you mentioned, like I did tend to take out my morning coffee in order to have it at morning tea time as a social thing rather than doubling up on that. Because as you mentioned, just a general milky coffee, full cream milk can be what, 120, 150 calories. And then, you know, they get those enormous ones at like Starbucks as well. And if you start to add things like syrup and hazelnut and that sort of thing into it, you're getting up to, you know, 200, 300 calories in just a coffee.
And sometimes we don't always realize what milk and things they're using. So sometimes a barista almond latte tastes so good because it's a sweetened almond milk, and it's and that's why it's so amazing and we love it. But I think the other thing is we're not preaching purism. You know, if you really enjoy having a muffin or banana bread, I would say just isolate the day that you have it so it's very clear that on Friday you share that with a friend, or just doing it once a week. Otherwise, you'll play constant mind games with yourself. So you'll be like, I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to have it. Okay, I'm going to have it. And then you feel guilty, and then you just write the whole week off. So it's important to establish a rule for yourself that you're happy with that directs it based on something you really enjoy. So ask this question, do I really get that much enjoyment out of that muffin or that banana bread or whatever it is that slips in when you are at work? Might be a cafe meal or a breakfast or a lunch at the food court, and then just isolate it to once a week as a special thing. So, you know, every Friday or every Monday, because you work with a colleague that you enjoy doing it with, you do that. But the rest of the time you're on track. And we can't tell you what those rules are. It's about working out what's going to suit you best and really identifying what you enjoy most. But as a rule, I might say to clients, you know, why don't you enjoy something at the cafe once a week and have that as your day? So not every day you're playing mind games with yourself about whether or not you should have it.
Absolutely. And now we're talking about drinks, Susie. That brings us on to our product of the week. You found some Avalanche collagen smoothies. I think we picked them up at Woolworths, didn't we? So give me a rundown on that. I know that collagen is all the buzz at the moment. How do we feel about these? I think they're smoothies, aren't they? I think you make them up yourself.
It's funny because when I sent this to you, I had just assumed they were the hot chocolates. And it wasn't until we started to do some more research for today's episode that I thought, oh, hang on, they're actually not even hot chocolates, because this product from Avalanche went gangbusters last year. It got a cult-like following because it was a really low-calorie hot chocolate drink that didn't taste sweetened. People could have it, you know, for minimal carbohydrates, mineral calories. It's a New Zealand company, to the best of my knowledge. And I had noticed this collagen product popped up, you know, a few months ago, and I hadn't really taken a hugely close look at it. And then when I had a look, as I said, it's not even a hot chocolate drink. It's a smoothie, a collagen smoothie. They're available in Woolworths. I'm not sure if they're available in Coles. I haven't seen them. There's minimal information online about them. We've really had to fish around to get the nutritionals, but the message of them is that they're marketing based on collagen protein. So of course, there's a lot of talk around about as an anti-aging strategy, should ingesting collagen help to reverse the aging process and help restore collagen? Now, collagen is a protein that is involved in new cell generation. And as we age and particularly go through menopause, we have a significant reduction in collagen production, which is blamed for sort of sallow skin and lines and wrinkles as we get older. So it's argued, or the beauty industry really pushes having collagen as part of our dietary intake to help reduce this and reduce the visible signs of aging. Now, this specific smoothie is available in that section where they sell like the pre-made hot chocolates, just usually near the coffee and tea section. In this particular one, there's 7 sachets of this smoothie that sell for retail for about $7, which comes in at about $1 a smoothie, which I think is quite expensive as a household product. But I guess when you break it down individually, it's relatively cheap if you were going and buying a smoothie from a juice bar. And they're only 84 calories. They come in at 10 grams of protein total. And then they claim on it, it's got 5 grams of collagen. Now, it's not specifically labeled. The type of collagen is not labeled either. It just says 22% collagen. It's got 8 grams of carbohydrate and 5.9 grams of sugars coming primarily from glucose syrup. A sweetener is what's being used to make it taste sweet without the calories. I'm sort of on the fence with it. You know, I haven't tried it. I'll be completely transparent on that. I don't know how it tastes. In general, these products are known for tasting pretty good. I guess the question is it going to give you any real health benefit with this collagen added? There's a little bit of evidence. You know, your understanding about the role of collagen in muscle cell regeneration and recovery is a bit better than mine. I can't see anything really wrong with it. Would I be encouraging people to buy it? Probably not. I wouldn't be prescribing it. It won't do you any damage if you enjoy having it. It's giving you 10 grams of protein, so reasonable as a post-workout recovery. But whether it's going to actually help build collagen, the jury is really out, because there's a lot of debate in scientific circles about whether collagen we ingest orally actually makes its way into the metabolic systems that would help in collagen production. And specifically in this product, we don't know the type of collagen being used, whether it's the peptide, whether it's there's different types. So it's hard for us to make that call. And at 5 grams, I'd say it's a little bit on the low side, but I would also say it's not going to hurt you. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I just look at the nutritionals of the product, you know, 85 calories, $1 per sachet, 10 grams of protein is actually quite good, only about 6 grams of sugar. I mean, it's a lot cheaper and probably the nutrition might be a little bit pretty much on par or maybe even a little bit better than getting a hot chocolate from a cafe or something like that. So I don't think just looking at that, the nutrition analysis in general, I don't think it's a bad product. But I think the real question is, the collagen, does that actually do anything? And as we said, it doesn't, it's not going to do you any harm. But I think a lot of people, there's a lot of hype around collagen where we just don't have that research to really back it up. So where there is a few small studies that have been done are really around the adding hydration to the skin and skin elasticity. So still a lot of these studies have been, some of them are industry funded as well. So we just need to be careful about that because the companies that are funding them are, there's sort of that bias there. So skin moisture, elasticity, and skin hydration is where there's a little bit of research around collagen supplementation. Really, in terms of like preventing wrinkles, I haven't seen any studies, even small studies. And the other big thing that it is helpful for collagen is in terms of injury recovery. But again, a lot of the research really states at least 15 to 25 grams of hydrolyzed collagen. So this product just wouldn't be anywhere near that. You'd have to take, you know, 3-4 of the sachets a day where you would be just blowing out your calories with that. You know, you'd be 300-400 calories needed in that plus the expense of it versus just a pure collagen powder. And I think the other thing is, yes, the protein is good in this product, but the third ingredient is actually whey protein. So the majority of the protein source, I think, is probably coming from, yes, the collagen, but also the whey. And what a lot of people don't understand with collagen is that it is not a complete amino acid. So you couldn't use collagen as a replacement for, say, example, a protein powder or as something that's going to be helpful for a post-workout nutrition because it's not a complete amino acid. So we're not getting in all of that nutrition that we need. There is a lot of hype around collagen. I'm excited to see where the research does go. I don't think it's going to do you any harm. But in terms of the dose in this certain product, I just don't think it's going to be high enough to really see any benefit long term. But again, I think if it tastes good and it, you know, the nutrition analysis isn't too bad on it. And it's something that, you know, you're choosing this instead of, say, a bottle of Coke or something like that. It's probably going to be a better option, right? Because the sugar content's not too bad. The protein, it's actually quite good. It might keep you fuller for longer. And from a cost perspective, if you're on a bit of a budget, it's probably a lot cheaper than going down to the coffee shop and ordering coffee or a takeaway hot chocolate or something like that. So I'm definitely not opposed to it. But I just think the collagen part of it in it is just a little bit of fancy marketing. And as you said, they didn't really tell us the collagen source, where it's from, how much is in there. It really just says collagen is the second ingredient at 22%. So I do think the company is being a bit funny with their marketing to get in that sort of consumer hype around collagen. And we just don't really have enough there yet to recommend it as a product with a clinical benefit, put it that way.
And I'm just thinking where I would even use it with clients. I'm thinking possibly I wouldn't use it as that after dinner sweet thing because it's not nutritionally, there's no reason to do that. Perhaps if someone wanted something with as an afternoon tea with a handful of nuts, you know, I'd get a bit of protein from that. But as I said, it wouldn't be something I actively prescribed. And if someone wanted to use it, I would say it's up to you, but I don't think it's giving you the specific benefit of collagen. I think it's more a reasonably low calorie product if you wanted. But, you know, the best things I would say for the skin, if you're wanting skin health, the best thing you can do is load up on those really brightly colored fruits and veggies like carrots, red capsicum, berries. Like these are the ones that are actually proven to improve the look and feel of the skin. And of course, fish, like oily fish. If you love sardines, salmon, like having that 3 or 4 times a week is one of the most powerful things you can do for your skin health, I would say above and beyond any potential benefit of collagen supplements. So that's my personal tip.
Absolutely. And even looking at environmental triggers, you know, are you wearing sunscreen every single day? Do you smoke? You know, are you living somewhere that's highly polluted? All of those things that have been shown in the research, there's actually research to support it that make a huge significant impact on your skin health, regardless of any sort of nutrition as well. So I think that, you know, if you're somebody that smokes, you don't wear sunscreen, you're out in the sun a lot of the time, and you're just trying to take these high doses of collagen, I don't really think you're really going to get much benefit from that. So there is so much we can always do, as we say, Susie, to build that healthy foundation first and add a couple of little sprinkles on top, such as collagen, may be beneficial for some people, but I really think the dose and the type of collagen is something that's incredibly important. And I just don't think we're going to see that in this type of product.
No, fair enough. Agree. So, and that links in really well to our listener question of the week that came through right in the beginning, and it was all about protein shakes. should they be taken after a workout? And this is a common question I have online whenever I go to open questions. People are asking me, what protein powder do they use? How do they use it? Now, a lot of your clients are training regularly in the gym, more so than mine, even though I'd love them to. What is your personal advice when it comes to protein shakes?
Most of my clients, I'd say probably 60 to 70% of my clients will use a protein powder, but not as a protein shake. So where the research is really strong, Susie, in terms of sports nutrition and fat loss, is that an even distribution of protein throughout the day is incredibly beneficial, A, for our metabolic health, and B, for fat loss. So where a lot of my clients, being female, struggle to get that protein in is at breakfast time. So I don't give them protein shakes after they go to the gym. I just add a little bit of protein powder into their breakfast, particularly if they're someone who doesn't eat eggs or doesn't eat dairy, because there are two biggest protein sources at breakfast. So instead of them just having a bowl of cereal with almond milk, say if they don't eat dairy, I'll stir through a little bit of vegan protein powder. Or even if they're having something like some porridge or some rolled oats, which is an incredibly healthy breakfast option, again, we're probably lacking that protein that I'm really looking for the majority of my clients, about 20 to 30 grams in their breakfast. So I like to use protein as an addition to an already healthy diet for my active females that are actively trying to build muscle mass or actively trying to lose fat, because that even distribution of protein throughout the day is so incredibly important. And a lot of people, you know, unless you want to go and eat four eggs for breakfast every single day or throw egg whites into your smoothie every morning, they do really have a hard time getting that protein intake up. But it is absolutely not essential. I have a lot of clients who say to me, I don't like the taste of protein powder, or I just don't want to use it. I think that's absolutely okay. And we find other ways to get that protein in. So it's really a personal decision. I am somebody who does use a little bit of protein powder, but as I said, I'm not someone who just has a protein shake for the sake of it just because I leave the gym or just because it might be a good snack option. I actually prefer to eat my protein from food, not have it as a shake, because I don't find that filling at all. So I am a big fan of my clients going to the gym or going to exercise and then getting in an actual meal or a snack versus a protein shake. So I think there's just, again, a lot of hype around protein shakes. We see it as this like magical thing that is needed, but not understanding that you can have a tub of Greek yogurt and get in just as much protein as a protein shake. Or you could go and have, you know, an egg white omelet for lunch with a slice of whole grain toast and some veggies, and that's more protein than you're going to get out of a protein shake. So protein shakes do traditionally have around 100 to 120 calories in them. A lot of brands on the market now actually add extra things into protein shakes. I've seen protein shakes with, you know, coconut flour and MCT oils added and all of these sorts of things, where I think if I'm using protein powder for a client, Susie, I'm using it purely for the protein. I'm getting all of my other nutrients from food, and we're just stirring through a little bit of protein powder into a smoothie or stirring it through in some porridge or something like that to boost the overall protein content. But all I'm really looking for in a protein powder, my preference is a standard whey protein, perhaps with a little bit of natural-based sweetener, stevia or a monk fruit or something like that. Really two or three ingredients on the packet and that is it. Whereas you look at a lot of the protein brands on the market, and sure, the flavors sound delicious, like, you know, cinnamon bun donut flavored protein, or, you know, choc mint ice cream flavored protein. It sounds delicious, right? But again, just so many, you know, 20, 30 ingredients in there. We can't pronounce half of them. Not really what I would call sort of like a whole food based option. Whereas whey protein is actually something that I might consider more, probably not a traditional whole food, but still quite a good addition to your diet, as long as you're not getting too many additives and extras in that protein.
Yeah, 100%. Now, I've used a lot of protein shakes in my days as a rugby league dietitian, far less often now. The only times I use it is sometimes with baked goods, if people are trying to make snacks like a ball that's got more protein, because those kind of healthy snacks like bars and bites and balls tend to have dates as the base, so they're all carbohydrate. So adding some whey protein will just boost that protein content. Or like you, if I've got vegetarians or vegans, particularly if they don't consume dairy, in the case of vegetarians, I might use it. And I'm the same. I'll use 100% whey, and I usually go for Australian brands, Body Science. I like Teresa Cutter's whey protein. But I also really like a pea protein if I'm choosing a vegan, because it does have a really high leucine content. And we know that the leucine is the molecule that helps bind the insulin receptor to help keep us full after eating. So for people who don't consume dairy or whole animal protein, I'll always go for a pea protein over, say, a brown rice for that reason, because it's going to give me the nutritional benefit of being high in leucine. So that's good, particularly for vegans out there. But no, yeah. I would agree 100%.
And we want 2 to 3 grams of leucine in our vegan-based proteins per serving as well, because that's what switches on what we call the switch for muscle protein synthesis. So if your goal is to actively gain muscle and you're flogging yourself at the gym, if you're going to have a vegan-based protein, you need to have enough so that you're getting 2 to 3 grams of leucine in with that protein shake. If not, you're just wasting your time.
Good, beautiful. All right, lots to talk about today, but that does bring us to the end of the Nutrition Couch for another week. If you have not done so already, don't forget to subscribe to have us delivered into your inbox every Sunday morning, and we would love it if you could leave us a review. We also have our Instagram and Facebook sites up, the Nutrition Couch podcast, for any feedback or questions that you have for us. And we will see you same time, same place next Sunday. Thank you for listening.
Catch you guys next week.